It is the time it is, 8:16 a.m. and on the other end of the line, we're in the fringes with Tiana Tuiono. Good morning.
Kia ora, morena.
Okay, so we want to talk about hate speech because last week we talked with James McDowell about the Karen moment that happened between Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins. But we've extended this conversation. How far should hate speech laws go, and is it hate speech to be called a Karen?
I kind of agree with the comments around, you know, like microaggressions not being hate speech. Mm-hmm. When they were asking that question in the House, the Minister Chris Farfoy says, "Well, we're not talking about microaggressions. You're pushing it a bit too far." So it's about finding out what that line is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to actually spell some stuff out, because with the Royal report on the Royal Commission on the terrorist attacks there in Christchurch, things needed to be a lot more clear, and that type of speech needed to be, you know, needs to be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say, you know, it's not freedom of speech is one thing, but then we're also going to talk about freedom of reach.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the platforming of those types of comments, because it's the spreading of it. I mean, that some of that stuff can be incredibly viral. And so someone, you know, having the right to freedom of speech, of course, that's a good thing. Spell out what we mean by hate speech, but then also freedom of reach as well. People that own platforms like Facebook, Twitter, so on and so forth need to take responsibility for the stuff that has been spread on their platforms. So that's another important dimension of that debate that we need to have.
Mm, most definitely. And as I think furthermore from that, the kind of viral Karen moment between Ardern and Jacinda. Ardern and Collins.
Yes.
Kind of highlights the sensational nature of the media. It was a very quick, you know, easily digestible soundbite. That's kind of the main thing that's been shared around in response to the hate speech kind of new laws coming in. So how does the continual acceleration of the media cycle kind of negatively impact maybe people's understanding of political issues?
Oh, that's right. You said it right there. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's just the way that media platforms kind of make their money. They need to spin the stuff out nice and quick. And there's often, if there's not a lot of depth to some of the reporting, which is, you know, part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That you see this, we see these moments play out. They get spun up, and then next thing you know, you're like, okay, what's underneath that? What does it mean? What is the institutional bias that's implicit in that,
mm-hmm.
Which actually made it that kind of moment as well? These are the conversations that we need to be having.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yes, definitely.
So we've been discussing the clean car discount, which is the ute tax. And it's a feedback scheme which sees charges on imported cars up to $5,175. This money is then used to subsidise the cost for people buying electric vehicles, low pollution cars, etc. So why should those buying imported cars be the one to take the downfall?
For me, it's we've got to do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we often hear on the other side of the house, they complain a lot about all the different things that are being proposed in terms of trying to sort out our climate change emissions, but there are no solutions. We've only got eight harvest cycles to actually get things sorted. It's really important to actually put some lines in the sand. Yeah, you know what? Well, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, for those that criticise these sorts of things, it's like, well, what's your solution? You know, these are the things that we need to do. Fossil fuels are actually heating up the planet that we require to live on. So if you say you want to sort out climate change, then we need to do some certain things. And fossil fuels and combustion engines and that sort of those sorts of things need to be phased out if we are to get through this.
Mm. No, that makes sense. I guess, yeah, I mean, you kind of got to the core of it there. It is, at its core, an environmental issue. What other things or solutions do you think maybe the government should be putting in place to promote clean living and environmentalism in New Zealand?
Trains, man. More trains. You know, I kind of get stuck on the motorway trying to get in. I live in rural Manawatu. There's no shops. There's no buses, no trains, no planes, nothing like that. So the only way I can get somewhere is by driving. But I would prefer to just jump on a train and boof, there you go. So I lived overseas for a little bit, and I know a lot of us have. And, you know, you get off the airport and boom, straight into the train, take you straight into the city. You look at Auckland, right? So if you had a train going from the airport into town, that'll just take all those cars off the road. Just make life a lot easier. So, you know, definitely I think we need to be looking at rail as well. I think we need to take a closer, another look at agriculture. Most of our carbon emissions come from agriculture, and you know, the research is there that you don't need to have a high number of cows on small places of land to actually still turn a buck over. And so encouraging those sorts of solutions and putting money in for farmers so that they can transition to regenerative agriculture and organic agricultural practices is something else we should be doing.
Yes, for sure. I mean, Josh and I talk about alternative transport all the time, so it feels amazing to hear that. Yes. James McDowell had no question for you last week, but do you have a question for him this time around?
Did he answer my question about whether he'd support our amnesty for people at
He did. He said he would support it, although tweaked a little. Yes.
Oh, he's probably like, oh, I should find myself supporting the Greens. Well, there you go. Okay. Well, I might actually sort of try to catch up with them in Parliament and ask them about that. That'd be interesting. Question for them. I reckon, like, I've got a question that's around the Treaty of Waitangi. Mm-hmm. They generally don't support it.
Yes.
But if there was an actual intersection of property rights, because they're really big on property rights, and the Treaty of Waitangi, would they support it? And the background on their question is, are they just anti-treaty? Or if you had a situation where it wasn't just about the treaty, but also about the rights of hapu and whānau to actually own stuff that was taken off them, would they support that?
Yeah, well, that's a fantastic question, and we totally will pass that along, especially in conjunction with what's going down at Petiki right now. Thank you so much for coming onto the show this morning. Hey, we look forward to hearing James's response for next week as well. The chain keeps on keeping us together. We're in the fringes. Thank you so much.
Cheers, mate. All right, ka kite.